The Word of Mouth podcast from NHPR is made possible with support from you, our subscribers, and from
Heinemann, a provider of resources written by real teachers for real classrooms. Heinemann values teachers as decision makers and students as curious learners. Discover the path to lifelong professional learning at Heinemann.com. Heinemann, dedicated to teachers.
I got there half an hour early. I got there at 8:30. So I just skipped school and figured that was more important.
This is Caroline Dillon, a senior at Spalding High School. She skipped class to make her mark on New Hampshire politics at a public hearing.
So we went into the room, which was small because the Senate committee was only five people.
We call to order our first hearing of the day, Senate Bill 1.
So they have their kind of like U-shaped desk where they're all sitting, and then there's one facing them, and then there's a couple rows of chairs behind that, and everybody sits in those rows of chairs.
This was the House Education and Workforce Development Committee. That voice you heard was the chair of the committee, Jay Kahn.
There's a roster where you sign in and you say, like, what bill you're there for, if you're in favor of it or against it, and whether or not you're speaking.
Caroline wrote her name on the roster and took a seat. And she waited for her turn to talk. She's normally a shy person. Public speaking isn't really her thing. But this was her moment.
I'd like to ask if Caroline Dillon is here and wishing to speak.
Hello and welcome to Civics 101 New Hampshire. I'm Ben Henry. Today on the show, public hearings. Before any bill can become a law in New Hampshire, it has to have at least one public hearing where anyone can show up and talk to their lawmakers face to face. You can tell them what you think about the bill. A lot of people, myself included, have never testified at a public hearing. It's kind of confusing to figure out when they happen and where they happen and how to participate. So, to demystify the whole thing, we're going to tag along with Caroline and see how she did it. Because here's the thing, lawmakers listen to your feedback. Not every time, but sometimes. Hearings are kind of the best way to have a political impact in New Hampshire that nobody knows about.
Not to be harsh, but like, honestly, way bigger impact than voting. Sorry. As an individual, not like going out and campaigning for someone or like whatever, but like you and your opinion getting through. Hearing, man.
100%.
Public hearing.
That's Anna Brown. She and her colleague, Jacqueline Benson, are joining us once again as our favorite two political wonks. Anna and Jackie, welcome back to Civics 101.
Nice to be here.
Always fun to be here.
These two work at Citizens Count, a website full of nonpartisan info about New Hampshire politics.
Every bill that goes through the New Hampshire House and Senate has to get a public hearing. A public hearing is a time when the committee that is first assigned the bill, every committee has a specialization. They'll schedule a time, and literally anybody can show up at this time, sign in, and tell the legislators on the committee their opinion. It's called testifying, which sounds very scary, but all you're doing is you're just sitting at a little table in front of about, 20 people if you're in the House, and giving your opinion. And they can ask questions if they have questions. Usually they don't ask many questions. And then that's it. And your testimony is part of the official record. And it's going to be included in all of the bill files for that forever.
For Caroline, on that day she skipped school, she had prepared a couple pages of stuff she wanted to say. You get 3 minutes to talk at a public hearing. That's it. This all started as a school project that involved researching a political issue.
And I was just doing a Google search, like, women's issues today, like, have women achieved equality? And I came across the term period poverty, and I was like, oh, what's that? So I researched it, and, it's lack of access to feminine hygiene products, and you associate that with third world countries and that type of thing. But the more research I did, I realized it's happening in America at an alarming rate. And, girls stay home from school, they use socks or newspaper or reuse products, and, risk for infection skyrockets. And I just thought that was horrible.
It was not just happening in America, it was happening in her state, in her school. She decided she had to do something about it. At a summer program, she learned how to draft a bill.
An act relative to blah, blah, blah.
It's a pretty short bill.
So Senate Bill 142 will put feminine hygiene products in all public high school and middle school bathrooms free of charge to the students.
And she gave that bill to a senator who has worked on women's issues in the past, Martha Hennessy. And long story short, here she is, sitting in a government building, waiting to speak up. Every public hearing starts with the sponsor of the bill. The sponsor is a legislator who acts kind of like the personal champion of the bill. In this case, Senator Hennessy, who represents District 5.
Senator Martha Hennessy.
No relation to the cognac, by the way.
I am bringing for your interest today Senate Bill 142, and I want to tell you a little bit about how it got here.
And Hennessy did what the sponsor usually does at this point. She explained what's in the bill and why she supports it. She also talked about Caroline, who had emailed her last summer.
Caroline introduced me to what is called period poverty, which is very much like what it sounds like.
After that, Caroline was up.
The committee calls, like, the first person on the roster. And so that was me. And I got up and you sit down at the desk. And most important thing to remember, you have to say who you are and where you're from. You can't just start talking, which was... seemed weird.
Please identify yourself.
Oh, my name's Caroline Dillon. I'm from Rochester, New Hampshire.
Before the hearing, Caroline put some thought into how she wanted to address the committee, what her strategy was.
I'm in high school right now. You know, a lot of, obviously none of the people on the Senate committee are in high school or have been in high school for a while. So I think a lot of times when you're in that sort of position, it can happen that you're a little out of touch. So I was trying to really bring the perspective from high school girls, you know, my friends, people that I've met, and really show them how difficult it is for people to go through that and make them understand from like the emotional standpoint why it's really important to us.
This isn't the only way to participate in a hearing. You don't actually have to say anything. There's a sign-in sheet at every public hearing where you put your name down and whether or not you support the bill.
We were just talking to some reps this morning. They look at that. They look at how many names, how many people showed up and took the time to come and actually like sign in on the sheet and say where they stood on this bill.
Public hearings happen pretty early on in the life of a bill, so committee members might not have made up their mind yet. If you sway committee members, they have a ton of influence over whether or not a bill will pass. Other legislators listen to their opinion on the bill.
And I think it's important to mention here that like not all states do this, right? Like not all states give every bill a public hearing. In some states, like the leadership of that state's legislature will kind of decide which bills are actually going to get to the point of having a hearing and which aren't, or the committee chairs can exercise discretion over what bills get a hearing, what don't. In New Hampshire, doesn't matter if it's got one sponsor and is just completely off the wall, it will get a public hearing, which means people who have an opinion about that bill will have an opportunity to come in there and be like, listen, I know this ban on chicken trespassing sounds like it's really not a big deal, but if you see what these chickens are doing to my yard, you would understand how important this is.
Given that we have hundreds of bills every legislative session, you can imagine that some of those hearings for them are pretty sparsely attended.
I've been at hearings where it's like three people, one of which is the sponsor of the bill, and then like two other people. That'll happen a lot on a lot of bills. However, if this is a really hot button issue, like right to work, marijuana legalization, any gun laws. I was actually at a hearing related to mandatory car insurance that went for like 2.5 hours. I've seen hundreds of people show up. For the marijuana legalization hearing I was at last week was close to filling Representatives Hall, which is like 400 seats.
On the day that Caroline gave her testimony, that same committee held four other hearings.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. The hearing on Senate Bill 141, establishing a committee.
An act establishing a committee to study options for lowering student debt.
Review of job candidate applications by school board members.
The crushing burden of student debt.
Each one took about 20 minutes. The student debt hearing filled up the room.
Get into the room and
get in and get it. It's crowded.
But back to Caroline. During a hearing, legislators on the committee can't speak for or against a bill. They are there to listen and to ask questions. The questioning happens right after you testify.
Thank you for your time, and I hope you'll vote in favor of New Hampshire's young women.
I'd ask the products before they were installed in the women's bathrooms. They were available in the school, but somewhere else.
Caroline was ready for this question.
Yeah, we had them available in the nurse's office, but kind of realized that especially for the girls who are really in need and don't have access as opposed to an emergency, it would be very difficult to go to the nurse every single day for a week, every single month.
The committee seemed receptive to her answer. Some hearings get a little more contentious in the question-asking section. Even though legislators aren't supposed to make statements,
the way around this is to ask a would you believe question. And so you will get legislators who will say, would you believe? And then you will get a nice long policy statement from them on exactly what they think about that bill. And then having been the person who is sitting in that chair sometimes for those questions, you have to go, yes, I would believe.
Are there snacks?
I wish there were. Not how about enough seats for everyone? I've been in hearings where there's standing room only, and they get very warm. The legislative office building, for anybody who wants to go to a public hearing, it's very warm. It's just like they just like keep it slightly tropical.
Yeah, dress so in layers.
Dress in layers that you can take off. There are no snacks. There are more women's restrooms in the legislative office building than there are in the state house, so that's good. You don't have to go up or down a floor to just find out where the ladies go.
We've been talking about hearings in the legislative branch, but it's worth noting the executive branch holds public hearings too. For example, state agencies like Fish and Game or Health and Human Services, when they change their rules, the public can weigh in. Public hearings are one of the most direct ways you can take part in government. But hearings are just like any platform designed to give people a voice, any of the machinery of democracy. Not everyone has equal access to them.
They take place in the middle of the day. These hearings are at 10 a.m. on a Tuesday or 1 o'clock on a Wednesday, and a large body of people are at work during that time. We also had an interesting thing come up the other day. We were talking with a legislator, and they were pointing out that the family and medical leave hearing started at 1 o'clock, and it went on for hours, so a lot of parents with kids had to leave by 3 o'clock because they had to be home for their kids. So then you're sort of disenfranchising people who came up and wanted to talk in person. So yeah, I mean, how about anybody from the North Country traveling ever to Concord to get their voice in? And it's not like there's a super easy way to know when there's a bill that has a hearing and what time it is and where it is.
Remember how Caroline had to miss school to come to the hearing? Hearings are sometimes scheduled just a few days before they happen, meaning if you want to be there, you've got to check the state legislature website constantly.
This is why paid lobbyists have such a job in New Hampshire, because they get paid to watch that stuff and track it and show up with, you know, just a couple days' notice with all their remarks prepared. And so you think about how many people are in the state versus those people showing up. It's not a lot. The people who do show up are going to be people who have jobs that allow them flexibility. So maybe business owners, you know, as opposed to lower level employees. It's going to be some stay at home parents, some retirees, that sort of demographic.
Another accessibility issue is just how hard it can be to find information about hearings.
First thing you have to do is decide what issue you care about, and then find the bill that matters, right? And you can do that through the General Court website.
That's gen, G-E-N, court.state.nh.us.
But it's a lot easier if you go to our website. Not that I'm trying to do a shameless plug here, but you can do
citizenscount.org. You can also look for news articles about issues, nhpr.org, for example. Wherever you go, you're looking for the number of a bill that's relevant to whichever issue you care about. It'll be something like HB 10 or SB 11, HB for House Bill, SB for Senate Bill.
Then you do have to go to the General Court website.
Eventually you have to deal with them.
You're eventually going to have to go there. Don't do it on a mobile phone.
Don't. Nope. Use a desktop or a laptop for all that's holy, please.
And yes, because you'll just cry. You'll be doing a lot of, like, thumb squinching. So you have to take a note of your bill number, and you basically got to go, like, every couple of days and plug your bill number in the Gen Court website and just watch for the hearing to be scheduled.
Most of your hearings are going to happen in January and February.
If you go 1 week and then you wait a week, the hearing could be done. It could have come and gone. You wouldn't even see.
Also, pro tip, check the website the morning of before you leave, because the room numbers have been known to change.
Yes. That's an important pro tip. And then you're wandering around the legislative office building going, where did they go?
Hearings are not always convenient to go to. They don't give you any snacks. So if you do show up, you've got to wonder if the hearing will actually affect the outcome of the vote.
Legislators can walk into a public hearing thinking that they know how they're going to vote on a bill. And points will be brought up by people that are testifying at the hearing that just completely change the picture or bring up aspects of how this bill could impact things that nobody in the committee has thought of yet. So, and it can be one person speaking that makes that difference.
I think that if it is a really well-known, pretty simple issue, legislators are already going to have their mind made up. So I do think that testimony makes a big difference in more complicated bills and in lesser known bills. Because once again, you go back to legislators don't have a ton of staff to be researching these issues for them. So they're going to rely on members of the public and lobbyists and other subject matter experts.
In the case of Caroline's bill, most of the people who testified were in support of the bill. One woman was opposed. She brought up funding for the bill.
I'm here to speak in opposition to this bill. In Hopkinton, the school budget is a constant issue. Please don't give us one more thing that we are required to do when we're already struggling to find the...
Caroline was a little surprised by this, but she knew that line of criticism would be coming. From her perspective, schools already supply these products in the nurse's office, so it's not much of a new expense. The committee, as far as Caroline could tell, seemed receptive. I asked Jackie and Anna how to give a good, effective testimony at a hearing. Their first tip was type up what you want to say. You can give the committee a paper copy of that testimony, and that will be part of the public record.
If you have written testimony, they're going to ask you not to read it verbatim since they're all going to get copies. So that's up to you. It can be as long as you want. But if you have your written, if you do have something you want to read out loud, keep in mind 3 minutes. So definitely no more than a page.
Second tip, don't repeat things people have said before you.
Don't repeat things people have said before you. Legislators get very just sort of like, I already heard this. It bothers them. So if you see things that you were going to say, you can just kind of mark those off and say, I don't want to repeat, you know, I agree with many of the things that have also been said in favor of this bill.
Last tip, figure out what your strategy is.
I think that it depends on the legislator. I've heard legislators who say, I want the personal story. I want to know how this has impacted you personally. I've heard legislators say, I don't care about your sob story. What are the statistics? What are the facts? But I do think that the idea is, if this is a bill about town government, were you at a town meeting? Have you served as a town clerk or something like that? If this is a bill related to education, were you a teacher? Do you have students in the schools? And use that as the perspective to help them see from your point of view.
There's going to be a reason you go to the trouble to go to this hearing. There's a reason you care about this bill. Get to the heart of that. That's what matters. Whether it's personal, whether it's objective, whatever it is, there's going to be somebody there who's going to be interested in hearing it.
Caroline's strategy when she testified was to impress upon a committee of mostly men that they needed to talk about tampons.
You can tell that they're kind of struggling with it internally. I see it when I talk to my dad, but there's this really cool moment when you see that they're struggling with it, and that man just takes a deep breath and closes his eyes and decides, I'm going to talk about it. It needs to be talked about. We're just going to get this over with.
A week and a half after Caroline sat down in front of that U-shaped desk to testify, the New Hampshire Senate brought her bill up for a vote. She watched it happen on the Senate's live stream.
The discussion took a while. It took half an hour.
I support the principle in this bill, but I took an oath to support and defend the Constitution.
There is no funding mechanism in this bill. I can't go back to my district and tell them, you have to do this.
We have thought carefully about whether this is an unfunded mandate. This is a matter of gender equity and equal access to education.
Then they took their vote.
The clerk will call the roll.
Senator French.
No.
Senator Ward.
Yes.
Six senators voted against the bill.
Senator Kahn.
Yes.
Senator Chanley.
Yes.
17 voted for the bill, and it passed.
The ayes have it. The motion of ought to pass as amended is adopted, 17-6.
Now, he'll move out of the Senate and go to the House.
Yeah, I'm going to go back and testify for the House committee, just like I did for the Senate committee. And then if it passes through there, then the House will vote on it. And I will probably live stream that, like I live streamed the Senate's vote.
If you want to find out what happens to Caroline's bill, follow us on Twitter at Civics101Pod, and we'll let you know as soon as we find out. Coming up, another episode of Civics 101 New Hampshire. We're going to get into another little corner of local government. This corner is full of hay bales and chickens and consumer protections. First, a quick break. If you're in the market for beekeeping equipment or some hay bales, if you need to hire someone to pull horseshoes off a horse, there is one publication where you can find all that stuff in New Hampshire. It's called the Weekly Market Bulletin. It comes out every Wednesday. It's got news and announcements and whatnot, but the part I like to read is the advertisements. Anyone who subscribes to the bulletin can put an ad in there. It's like Craigslist for farmers.
Custom lumber sawing with Wood Miser portable sawmills, 12 years of experience, will travel. Seedless straw, ideal for strawberries, garlic, lawns, etc. Also good for bedding outside dogs. Spike tooth harrow, $25. J.D. Planter, $25.
What I like about it is that it changes with the seasons. In the spring, you see ads for the first cut of hay. In the fall, you see the harvest. In the winter, you see firewood.
Complete sets of sap buckets, approximately 80 sets, $5 each.
The bulletin is published by the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. And it might be one of the longest-running publications in New Hampshire. The first bulletin came out in 1919, and the department claims they have never missed a single Wednesday since then. Hello and welcome to Civics 101 New Hampshire. Today, we're going to talk about what the Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food does, besides publish the bulletin. This is a department in the executive branch that regulates New Hampshire's farms, and it looks out for the safety of people eating the vegetables and meat that come from those farms.
The way I like to put it is that the whole department is really about consumer protection.
This is Sean Jasper. He is the commissioner of the Department of Agriculture. The department is made up of six divisions, and they spend a lot of time inspecting things.
Our animal industry division is really about making sure that the meats that people are buying, there aren't pathogens in there, that there aren't diseases in the animals that may spread to humans. So we do blood tests on all the poultry and all the cattle in the state of New Hampshire.
Employees from the department even go out and test the feed that farmers in New Hampshire buy for their livestock, just to make sure there's nothing in there that shouldn't be in there.
We license all the pesticides applicators in the state of New Hampshire. And regulate the pesticides themselves to make sure that people who are applying pesticides are doing so according to the law and that they know what they're doing.
The world is full of chemicals and diseases and stuff that you do not want in your food. And the Department of Agriculture is responsible for keeping that stuff out of your food. It's kind of a thankless job. If they do it perfectly, nobody knows.
No, that's true. And we're very lucky in New Hampshire. I think we do a very good job. You don't hear about these foodborne illness outbreaks in the state.
One thing that does cause a headache for farmers is not disease, but birds eating their crops.
It's not unreasonable to say there could be up to $1 million a year of damage just in corn.
It's something I've never thought about, but yeah, birds are out here eating money. Here's another thing I would never think to be worried about. When you're filling up your gas tank and that meter ticks upwards, 2 gallons, 3 gallons, 4 gallons, how do you know that that's accurate? What if the gas station is ripping you off and not giving you the amount of gas that you pay for? Well, the Department of Agriculture are the cops on that beat. They have a division of weights and measures. Those folks regulate any type of commercial device that measures out the stuff you buy. So at the grocery store, the scale that says how many pounds of bananas you're buying, that has to be occasionally checked and calibrated by the department. So the department is everywhere. But although times have changed, its core responsibilities aren't that much different than what they were 100 years ago when the department was created.
Well, I've always enjoyed history. So one of the things that I learned in going back and looking at the Department of Agriculture reports from 100 years ago that, all things old are new again. Farmers' markets started really at World War I, and I had never heard of kale until a few years ago. But looking in that report, finding out how much kale production there was in the state of New Hampshire.
Starting in the mid-1800s, New Hampshire had a board of agriculture, which was just a group of farmers. But in 1913, it was replaced by the Department of Agriculture. And the legislature began writing all these new laws to regulate farms to protect consumers. The heyday of New Hampshire agriculture was the 1930s and 40s.
I mean, we had some really big farms, some huge truck farms, some huge poultry operations that really were national in scope. You know, we're just constantly trucking produce into Boston, and we had a real impact on the market. The Hood family started producing milk here in New Hampshire and dairy.
Ever since those glory days, the number of farms in New Hampshire has been going down, partly due to competition from other parts of the country, partly because other industries are simply more attractive for workers these days.
Getting people who want to work is a real challenge. And that continues to be one of the largest challenges to agriculture, because you can only charge so much for your product and you can only pay your help so much. So it's a balancing act.
New Hampshire will probably never be that dairy powerhouse that we once were. But farming is having a moment here. We've been writing the local food movement. People are willing to pay more now for food that's grown right here in New Hampshire. Sean Jasper says the Department of Agriculture is one leg of a three-legged stool that supports this resurgence of farms in New Hampshire. Another leg is the Farm Bureau, which is not part of the government. It's a group that advocates for farmers in New Hampshire. The third leg is the UNH Cooperative Extension. This is like a side office of the university, located in each county, that does agricultural research and provides education about farming, but also gardening, science, nutrition. Kelly McAdam is a field specialist in the Belknap County office.
And so I work with farmers in Belknap County, really kind of their general agriculture questions. And I've been working more and more lately past few years with women farmers and also beginning farmers.
Part of McAdam's job is to help people get started in agriculture. That means helping them navigate the Department of Agriculture's regulations.
So, you know, you can't just stick up a sign at the end of the driveway that says, you know, organic vegetables. There's regulations around that, and they have to follow those procedures.
The biggest hurdle for entering the industry, though, whether you want to grow apples or raise pigs, is getting land to do it on.
It's hard for a new farmer to be able to afford land in New Hampshire. I look in the Lakes region, and I have some folks that want to start farming, but they're like, well, where do I go to buy land to farm in the Lakes region? Because there's all these competing interests. You know, you can put housing lots on it or build a second home. So I feel like the land access is a pretty big issue.
Turns out the Market Bulletin, that weekly publication, is made by just one person.
Hi, I'm from New Hampshire Public Radio.
Her name's Teresa Sheridan, and meeting her felt like meeting a celebrity.
I'm a big fan of the Market Bulletin.
Oh, thank you.
I just wanted to say I appreciate your work.
Thank you.
Cool. Yeah, do you like doing it?
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Cool. What's your favorite, like, section of the bulletin?
I just like the layout, putting all the different things in subjects, and I've had to learn everything.
This podcast is produced by me, Ben Henry, along with Jackie Helbert and Daniela Ali. Our executive producer is Erica Janik. Civics 101 at New Hampshire is supported in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and we are a production, as always, of New Hampshire Public Radio.